Into hour number two, I am Jim Rome. I'm live in Southern California. And as you know, this program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Big show today. Lots to cover. Coming up later on this hour, Virginia head basketball coach Tony Bennett. But right now we are talking baseball. And by the way, it is awesome to be talking baseball, real baseball. We are joined now by an MLB Network insider, Sports Illustrated senior writer, three-time National Sports Writer of the Year. He is a two-time Emmy Award winner. He is a New York Times best-selling author. Tom Verducci is my guest. Tom, it's so good to have you back. How are you?
I am great. Baseball's back. Thanks for having me, Jim.
That is so true, Tom. It's great. You know, looking at Manny Machado, let me start right there. Obviously, Tom, the White Sox and Ken Williams in particular were stunned. They were shocked by that signing. What was your reaction to the Padres getting their guy at 10 years, 300 mil?
Yeah, I was surprised that they were shocked, because anytime you put guaranteed money in front of a player the way the Padres did at 300 and the White Sox guarantee was at 250, the player's going to take the guaranteed money. Even though the White Sox had a couple of option years that could get it up to 320, you know, these guys all measure themselves really on what is the guaranteed number. And there's a magic number to get, you know, to a level where it starts with a three for Machado. Give the Padres credit. They stepped up to get the deal done. I was surprised that the White Sox were surprised. I mean, both teams now have really good young players. Both of them, I think, are close to turning a corner. And the Padres just made their route a little quicker. I mean, that's a team that could win around 81, 82 games as soon as this year, but I think can contend as soon as next year.
All right, so on that point, Tom, the move feels significant both on a team level and on a league level. Starting with the team, you mentioned that, and you also wrote for SI.com that the Padres have not had a position player start in the All-Star game since Tony Gwynn way back in 1998. So how important is this signing of Machado?
It's huge for me because it gives them a true face of the franchise. I mean, listen, their viewership in terms of their TV numbers have been down almost in half in the last 3 years. The ownership under Ron Fowler has not fielded a winning team. No one's got a Cy Young vote or even one MVP vote. You know, they just really have been off the map while rebuilding this team. And I think this gives them not so much instant credibility, but instant recognition. You know, he's a guy that's going to invigorate the Southern California area, especially the Padres fans. And I think he's the kind of guy that he's going to give you consistent elite results. A guy at 26 years old, and what he does, look at his games played. He's out there every day. Now, you can question, as a lot of baseball people do, whether he's the guy in the clubhouse. You want to be the one setting an example for young players. But in terms of name recognition, star power, elite production, you know, they bought some really a very low-risk guy at the age of 26.
We were talking to Tom Verducci. All right, then. So from a league-wide standpoint, the thinking going into the offseason, Tom, was that teams would be all over Machado and Bryce Harper, but they were still unsigned in mid-February. So exactly what's going on here? Like, is MLB free agency broken, or has the timeline for big moves changed from December to February?
Yeah, it's more of the latter. It's not broken. I mean, if you're a player and you're trying to sell your mid-30 years, yeah, it's probably broken. Jim, you know how much faster the game has become. Just look at the velocity on the mound, the way guys have to play defense out of shifts and have positional variability. That all favors the younger player, and I think now the amateur level is doing such a great job developing players coming up. It kind of shortened the learning curve. I mean, think of all the guys, the Acuñas, the Correas, the Lindors of the world who hit the ground running at 20, 21 in the big leagues now. Teams are no longer afraid of young players. They're giving them opportunities. And no, it's not just because they're cheaper than older players. It's because they fit the modern game better. So, you know, if you're Adam Jones, he'd been a great player. In the old days, you would have gotten paid. You would have gotten a multi-year deal. Not in today's game. People don't want to buy your mid-30 years. So in that sense, free agency has definitely changed. But in terms of the timing, I think it's just a recalibration. We were so used to, you know, going way back here, you know, the Reggie Jacksons getting wined and dined by George Steinbrenner, and even Alex Rodriguez had a lot of suitors in November and was signed at the winter meetings. You know, the game just doesn't operate that quickly now. These contracts are much bigger. There's a lot more moving parts. The way teams look at players analytically, they try not to get emotional about buying free agents. And that makes it a slower process. So it's not broken, but certainly I think all of us, especially the players, but even us as media and fans, we have to realize that it's not the same free agency. It's going to play out longer than it did in the past.
We are talking to Tom Verducci. All right, Tom, so what about Bryce Harper? For instance, when you look at Harper, is he a better fit for a team that wants to win right now or a team that's rebuilding and needs buzz?
I think the latter, Jim. I think he's one of the few guys in the game that can sell tickets. He can drive TV ratings. I mean, listen, he can walk down the street of any city in America and people know that's a baseball player. That's Bryce Harper. I mean, other than Aaron Judge, I don't know who you can say that about. As much as I love Mike Trout, I don't think you could say that about Mike Trout. So Harper has this value added to him that very few players have, right? So in answer to your question, yeah, he's going to make any team better. I mean, his numbers through the age 25 season in terms of getting on base and hitting home runs are on Hall of Fame levels. He's been that good this early in his career. So you're looking at his best years coming up. I think 40, 50 home run seasons you're looking at from 26 to 30. Beyond that, I mean, who knows? The swing is kind of violent. It reminds me of Tiger Woods, right? When you swing that violently, there's a toll that it takes on the body over time, especially as you age into your 30s. But for now, you're talking about a guy who moves the needle with the fan base, makes the team better. And what I also like, Jim, is he's the guy who wants to be in the middle of your lineup. I equate him to Reggie Jackson that way. May not be the world's greatest baseball player when you shake it down analytically, but, man, when you have him in the middle of your lineup and he's the fulcrum, everybody else slots behind him, he takes on all the attention, lets other people kind of just glide through what they're doing. He's a game changer in a lineup in a lot of different ways.
It's true, right? Like, his WAR is not that great, but he moves the needle. Tom, like, that point about Reggie Jackson, I mean, I think people listening right now, a lot of people listening right now do remember Reggie, but maybe some of the listeners are too young to really understand what that guy was about, the straw that stirs the drink. If you took a moment to explain Reggie Jackson, have you ever seen a star athlete who liked being a star athlete more than Reggie back in the day? He loved being Reggie, and that's why we loved him.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody, by the way, who loved being a superstar. I think he kind of invented that term, superstar, right? He loved playing that role. He wore the fur coats off the field. He loved the attention, the straw that stirs the drink. I think Bryce has got a lot of that in him. Remember, you know, I was the one who wrote the story about the kid when he was 16 years old and he's on the cover of SI. And I started thinking, man, maybe that's not a cool thing to do for a teenage kid. But Bryce being Bryce, he handled that really well, and I think it's something that he wanted, enjoyed, and put it in the right perspective. Type A personality type. Those are the guys you want, I think, up there with runners on base. And you're right, in terms of WAR, he's not a great defender. You know, last year he literally did not leave his feet on defense. And I think he did that to preserve himself in his platform season, to make sure he had the games played rather than another injury-shortened season. I think he's a much better outfielder than what he showed last year. I wouldn't say he's a great outfielder, and that does affect his WAR number. But this is the comp I like to use, Jim, talking about WAR. In the last 3 years, not just last year, last 3 years he ranks 86th in baseball in WAR.
Wow.
Corey Dickerson, your listeners probably never heard of, ranks above Bryce Harper. But there's no question about, A, who you'd rather have, and, B, who you'd rather see as a fan. So to me, the value of Bryce Harper goes much more beyond WAR. And if we just, you know, reduce all these guys to algorithms, we're taking the romance out of the game. There's got to be room for emotion and romance, and I think fans want to see Bryce Harper play, especially if he's on your team.
Tom Verducci joining us. So who's going to see him play? Where do you think he ends up?
I do think he winds up in Philly. I've thought all along he's going to get at least a dollar more than Giancarlo Stanton, so say about $326 million. The problem for Philly now, it looks like they may be bidding against themselves when you're talking about that level. I mean, the Giants could be in it, but I don't see them nearly at that level. I think the Boris camp has been hoping that the Nationals circle back. I personally don't see that happening. I think that ship has sailed. But I do think the fit is good in Philly. I just don't know if Scott's going to be able to get that to 326 in the next day or two. It may take a while.
We're talking to Tom Verducci. Tom, before you go, you had a report yesterday for SI.com that Major League Baseball is cracking down on high-tech sign stealing. How widespread was high-tech sign stealing last year, and what exactly were teams doing?
Well, it was becoming widespread, and I think that's why baseball smartly jumped in here. It's probably, I was told, about a half dozen teams. There's cameras all over the ballpark now, and generally they're used in the sense of analytics in terms of producing or measuring the production of hitters and pitchers. But it became something that you could steal signs by putting a camera out in the outfield and having the feed go to the clubhouse, and the clubhouse could relay signs or sequence of signs to the players on the field. And obviously, that's cheating. It shouldn't be allowed. You know, it's fine if you're standing on second base as a runner and the team hasn't disguised their signs and you can pick them up and relay. Everybody realized that's a part of the game. But when you introduce electronics and steel signs, I think people realize that's not the case. And at the GM meetings last November, the GM said basically, hey, we got to stop this thing because before it becomes an arms race on how to cheat in baseball. So good for baseball to jump on this. I think the big thing for baseball is, Jim, you know, we talk all the time about the pace of action, pace of play in the game. It was slowing the game down because people got so paranoid about signs being stolen electronically that they went to much more complicated series of signs that took longer to give. So I'm hoping this actually moves the game along a little bit better.
All right, so then finally, Tom, they want to move the game along quickly. I understand that. And there's always a discussion about how do we make the game better? How do we make the game more entertaining? Hey, how about this? Why don't we give the National League a designated hitter? It's not the first time it's come up. I'm sure it's not going to be the last. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it, Jim. I think, and I like the fact that there's two different leagues, two different rules. I do. I think if you like checkers and you like chess, you can pick your poison, which one you like better. I mean, I just think this it's a better game. It's a more nuanced, detailed game in the National League. It's not to say I'm against the DH, but I hate to see that you would take out that style of play completely. And when you think about it, Jim, it doesn't add that much more offense. Last year, the batting average in the American League was 249, and in the National League, it was 247. That difference over a whole season works out to one hit every 400 at-bats. I mean, because we have so many relief pitchers and pitching changes and pinch hitters, you're talking about two at-bats per game in the National League for a pitcher in the first half of the game. I want to live with that to keep that style of play. Hey, it may be inevitable. It probably won't be until the next CBA, the next 3 years from now. Maybe it is going to change down the road. I wouldn't have a problem with using it in all interleague games in the course of a season, but I would not just kind of end the way baseball was meant to be played because you want to see a DH in both leagues.
All right, so it's such a great, great point. So because you said that, one last follow. What do you make of the other rules then? Like banning the shift or requiring every pitcher to face three batters? I mean, does that feel like a good solution or is that an artificial answer that really does not address the problem?
It's an artificial answer. It really is. You know, put a pitch clock in, you'll see the game move quicker. We saw it in the minor leagues. You know, in the last 10 years, just the time between pitches is about, the players have added about 2 to 3 seconds. That actually winds up being 13 minutes of a game of nothingness. Just cut that out, and the game will look to you and me like it's moving faster. Put that in, and then later on, let's talk about addressing the strategy of the game, right? Leave the strategy alone. I don't want to stifle innovation and strategy. I mean, somebody comes up with a new offense in the NFL, nobody says, hey, get rid of that offense. Or, you know, a certain different kind of a blitz. Hey, get rid of that. That's not fair. I'm against those kind of governors on innovation and strategy until you absolutely have to do it. We're not close to being there yet. Let's take care of the pace of the game before we start touching the strategy of the game.
Governors on innovation and strategy is a great way to put that. He's an MLB Network insider, a Sports Illustrated senior writer, a New York Times best-selling author, Tom Verducci, my guest. Tom, expertly done. Always great to have you on the show. I appreciate your time, Tom, very much.
Always a pleasure, Jim. Thank you.
That was so fun. Great job, Tom. I'm not sure anybody does any better than him. Tom Verducci. Everybody wants governors on innovation and strategy. It'd be like saying, oh, Sean McVay, we thought of a better way to do it. Better change the rules. And by the way, you didn't need to. The hood took care of that. I don't know, maybe you go the other way with the ball. Maybe lay down a bunt. Maybe find a way to beat that shift. Maybe not keep doing what you've always done and keep hitting right into it. There's a reason why they're shifting on you. Another topic I haven't gotten to yet. Sex. Still the undefeated, even untied champion, heavyweight champion in the history of the planet. Don't take my word for it. Take Tristan Thompson's. Taken down again. At this point, sex is ragdolling my man. This dude is so out of hand. You know how out of hand? If I'm going to have a take on the Kardashians, it's really out of hand. Because I really couldn't care less about those people. In fact, I couldn't care less than not caring less about those people. Do you know how bad it has to be for me to get to that family on this show? Yeah, the guy leaves me almost no choice whatsoever. I may get there a little bit later on. Tony Bennett coming up at 40 past. As any coach or GM will tell you, the foundation of any great team is great talent. So it's no surprise the teams dedicate so much time and effort towards finding the right players. The same rule applies when it comes to hiring. You need top talent, but you don't have endless resources to find it. Luckily, you do have ZipRecruiter. They scout talent for you. With ZipRecruiter, one click sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards. But they don't stop there. Their powerful matching technology scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and then invites them to apply to your job. It's so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through their site within the very first day. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest-rated hiring site in America. Right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Rome. 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 I use the service. It's amazing. Try it for free. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Join CBS on the road to the Final Four with great NCAA basketball this weekend. Saturday, 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific. Auburn heading to Las Vegas to take on number 4 Kentucky, followed by number 16 Florida State against number 8 North Carolina in Chapel Hill. Sunday, Villanova tipping off against Xavier, 1:30 Eastern, 10:30 Pacific. Madness is in the air. Those are some great matchups. Speaking of which, I love the weekend matchups, but I have to mention tonight's matchup. Tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, number 8 North Carolina against top-ranked Duke at Cameron Indoor. Now, every time these two get together, it's epic. You know the deal about these two, how they're just down the street from one another. You know the history. Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins. My man Sam Perkins does not get enough credit. I love Sam Perkins. I love the big smooth. 7-footer knocking down threes, looking half asleep like he doesn't care, just stacking rings. I mean, I love Sam Perkins. Love him. Michael Jordan, Sam Perkins, James Worthy. Let me back that up. You know the history. Sam Perkins, Michael Jordan, James Worthy, Christian Laettner, Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, Tyler Hansbrough going undefeated at Cameron and getting his face smashed by Gerald Henderson in the process. Austin Rivers killing the Tar Heels with a dagger in the Dean Dome. I mean, such amazing history. And now you get the latest installment. And if you want to get into that building, you better have a stack of cash. Because it isn't just the Super Bowl of college basketball. It is now the Super Bowl ticket price of college basketball. In other words, you're not getting into that building for under $2,700 on the secondary market. And according to Vivid Seats, one ticket went for nearly $11,000 earlier this week. One ducat for $11,000. If you're throwing down that kind of dough, you better not be behind the bench. You better be on the bench. And you better get at least 10 minutes of playing time. So why all the hype? Why, after all these years, is there all that hype right now? Why all the money? Four letters. Z-I-O-N. I mean, like, R.J. Barrett is amazing. Cam Reddish is incredible. North Carolina is loaded. But this is all about one man, and one man only. Zion. Zion Williamson. Because this is going to be his only game against the Tar Heels at Cameron Indoor. Yes, they'll meet again next month in Chapel Hill. But that joint holds double what Cameron holds. So, that's going to have a different feel. Twice as many tickets, a much bigger arena, a totally different environment and atmosphere. Cameron Indoor Stadium isn't a stadium. It's a bandbox, and that's what makes it so awesome. That's why it's so cool. That's why it's so special, because it's packed, and the fans, the students, are right on top of the floor. So, seeing Zion there tonight, it's like seeing a band before they break out. Except Zion has already broken out. You already know he's going to be legendary. It's just a matter of when, not if. So what kind of a game will he have tonight? I don't know. He hasn't faced North Carolina yet. They haven't faced him yet. So it's impossible to predict. But I know this. The next time that guy lets us down will be the first time. I mean, I know it sounds crazy to say about a freshman, but he's coming off a game where he had 32 on Saturday, and it was like, so? It was like, ho-hum. Like, who cares? And? Last week, he sat with foul trouble and still had 27-12 in a 23-point comeback on the road. And then, of course, there was the block against Virginia. I still start every single morning by watching that block 10 times. Roll it.
Williamson on Guy. Huff, the kick. Open again is Hunter. Never mind. Zion Williamson with other ideas.
That is called a recovery.
That is also called ridiculous. How many guys his size could run that far, jump that high, block a shot, and not commit a foul? Mr. James,
Mr. LeBron James can do it.
It's crazy. It's like the coolest thing. Hey, look, I don't know what you're going to get if you drop $3,000 tonight, but I know you will see history. And that's something worth paying for. Hansbrough faced Duke numerous times. Leitner went up against the Tar Heels over and over again. Zion is doing this once, at home, and that's it. One and done. The ultimate one-off. I don't know, kind of like the Rolling Stones at Wembley, if they only did it once. Like, I don't know, Billy Joel and Madison Square Garden, if you only played MSG once. Actually, that's a bad example. I retract that. He's been there more times than the Knicks, practically. No, I got a better example. That would be like you sitting in your living room, minding your own business, the one time BJ jumped the curb and slammed his car into your house. That's what that's going to be like when Zion shows up at Cameron Indoor. Imagine watching TV or just sitting there in your living room and all of a sudden Joel has driven his rig right through your window. John at the bar, I'd be like, easy, Billy. That's nothing to make a joke about. I mean, even if Zion has a bad night, even if he stinks up the joint, it's still going to be worth it to say that you were there the one time he played North Carolina at Cameron. It's crazy. Oh, one more thing. It's the part of the take you don't like. It'd be like the Stones at Wembley or Joel at the Garden if they weren't paid to do it. Because that kind of is the crazy thing about this whole thing. Everybody's making money off tonight's game except the guy who's making tonight's game the moneymaker, Zion, which is maybe the craziest thing of all. Everybody is paying to see a guy who's playing for free. So you better enjoy that. It's only one night only. Zion and Duke versus UNC. If you want to get in, don't just bring your checkbook, bring your whole damn checking account. That's what it's going to cost. It's going to be awesome. Can't wait to see that. When we return, we're talking more college basketball. Virginia head coach Tony Bennett. And then after that, we were wide open.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. It is so good to be with you on this Wednesday. We talked ACC basketball last segment. I mentioned Duke and North Carolina. Why don't we stay on topic? We are joined right now by the head coach at Virginia, 10th season with the Cavaliers. He is a three-time National Coach of the Year, led the Cavaliers to 29 wins or more in four of the last 5 years. They are currently ranked number three in both polls. Virginia, 23-2, 11-2 in the ACC. And they are at number 18, Louisville. Saturday, noon Eastern, Tony Bennett is the coach there, and he joins us now. Tony, it's so good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Good to visit with you, Tony. So you beat number 20, Virginia Tech, on Monday night in their place in a game where maybe you didn't play the kind of first half you would have liked. As you said afterwards, the defense wasn't so sharp. You were a little loose with the ball, and then you played with too much finesse. So what was your message at halftime to your team, and how pleased were you with the way they responded?
Yeah, and some of that was due to, obviously, Virginia Tech. They're a scrappy team, and that's such a rivalry game. But just challenge your guys. And I can remember my dad always telling me, you know, when you whip a donkey, it kicks. When you whip a thoroughbred, it responds. And, you know, it was more of just a challenge to our guys at halftime, saying, look, for us to be as good as we can, we have to, you know, tighten up, toughen up. And we weren't perfect, but I was pleased that they just guys stepped up individually, but collectively they became more physical and just more sound, which, you know, always is a good formula, home or away against competition.
Yeah, Tony, it's funny you mentioned your dad, because one of your assistants said that you channeled your inner Dick Bennett in that talk. Is that how it felt to you? Was there a little bit of your dad in that talk?
Sometimes. My dad's a fiery Italian, and he's very calm, but he can be a volcano. Then when that volcano erupts, it's not a whole lot you can do. But, no, I just, you know, I tried to challenge him. And, like, sometimes you make too much of that. But I liked it. I really had some passion, and I wanted our guys to compete to the best of their abilities, because I knew it would be required for that second half and really the rest of the way.
Virginia head coach Tony Bennett joins us. What about Kyle Guy? How much did he do to keep you in that game, especially in the first half?
He was terrific. He has an ability. You know, I've coached so many special shooters, and he is one of those guys that when, you know, he just needs a little sliver of time, and he can rotate in the air. And we were struggling some, but he hit some big-time shots. He had a pretty cool tip dunk for him, and, you know, that ignited us. But he kept us in there with some shot-making, and then, again, the second half, I thought we played even better collectively.
You know, he's done that time and time again. He had the pair of back-to-back huge threes in the final minutes on the road at North Carolina in your win at Chapel Hill. Right. So we've seen that from him. You know, when you look at the ACC right now, there are some really good teams, obviously. Your only two losses have been to Duke. So top to bottom, how tough is the conference this year?
It's always good. You know, there's so many solid coaches, good coaches in the league, and the mature teams, you know that. Unfortunately for Virginia Tech, they lost their, and hopefully he'll be back soon. He's a heck of a player, Justin Robinson. So some injuries have hurt some teams, but the league is good. There's maturity in the league, and then the teams that are young that have some first-year guys are so gifted. We go to Louisville, they've got some grad transfers, and Chris Mack has come in and done a great job. So it's just, you know that old saying, what's the toughest league in America? The one you're in, and it always feels like that. But what I noticed about the ACC, when it's a really good year, it's elite and great. And if they say it's a down year, it's still really good. It never dips down, and that's what's impressive about it.
We're talking to Tony Bennett. You know, you mentioned the coaching in that conference, and it's some of the best that are there. What about Buzz Williams? Now, Buzz, Tony, is one of my favorites ever. I love this guy. I admire this guy so much. Around that profession, what do people think about the way he goes about his business, the way he carries himself, and what do you know you're going to get when you go up against a Buzz Williams coach team?
Yeah, he's real competitive. I like that. He just, his teams play hard, and he's, you know, he's done a very great job at Virginia Tech. He was at Marquette, and he's just, I like it. He's humble in his beginnings. You know, I've heard his story, and I know Buzz a little bit, and I love how he's just built his programs up, recruits guys, and they just play hard. I always look at coaches when their teams play hard and they scrap, and they get the most out of them. That's impressive. And, you know, that being our rival, I've been so impressed with the job he's done at Virginia Tech in a short amount of time.
Tony Bennett joining us. You know, Tony, time will tell, but you've had some really, really good teams at Virginia. How does this one feel to you? How does this one compare to some of the ones that have come before it?
Yeah, it's they're all different. Jim, I've had, having Malcolm Brogdon and Joe Harris on a team with Anthony Gill, Mike Toby, London Prentice, those are some really good teams. This team, we have some versatility, you know, whether it's offensively or defensively, and DeAndre Hunter is continuing to improve with Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy. Those are our big three, but we have some real good pieces around it. Braxton Key stepped up in the last game. So I think it's a little different versatility-wise, maybe defensively, than some other teams. And then offensively, you know, we don't maybe score on the interior quite as much as some of those others, but really smart, skilled guys, and when we're playing well, they're just so fun to watch, the way they'll share the ball, and they're very unselfish, and most of my teams have been that way. I'm thankful for that.
No doubt. Tony Bennett joins us. Now, Tony, you said something I thought really interesting before the start of the year. You were talking about the notion of run to the roar. What exactly does that mean?
Well, you know, the way our season ended last year, we had an amazing season, and Jim, that was so humbling to lose like that. And I knew going in this year, you know, you can say, well, we're just going to sweep it under the rug. But wherever we go, people are going to be bringing up our loss to UMBC. And I wanted to, we had a saying I talked about a lot, saying if you learn to use the adversity right, it can buy you a ticket to a place you couldn't go any other way. And just to really go at it, to use the motivation of how our season ended and also the good in a way and really be freed up to go after. We even talked about, I heard a guy talking about trembling courage over measured cowardice. And it's okay to be a little trembling, but to go after what we want in the best way we can and go right at it and not back down or stand on the side or go a different way. And whether you get there or not, at least you're going at it guns a-blazing. And the beautiful thing is, you know, I know if you don't, we're going to be okay. We face some hard stuff, and that even frees you up to have a perspective that way. But you might as well swing for all you got when you're doing it.
Tony Bennett joining us. See, Tony, the thing is, though, you didn't sweep that under the rug. Not now, not then. When you lost to UMBC last year in the tourney, it would have been pretty easy maybe to freak out a little bit, maybe to go into seclusion. You didn't do that. In fact, you encouraged your players to watch the rest of the tournament, and you could not have handled that with any more class than you did. Why was that so important in that moment?
I just thought, you know, anybody who's been in sports, there's some bigger stuff going on. You're going to face adversity, and I know that was the first time ever. But I thought they and all of us had an opportunity for their, you know, all those players, for their brothers and sisters, their parents, their friends. If they could see, you know what, these guys, yes, it stings. Yes, it's humbling and it hurts, but they're okay. They still are going to be all right. They're still going to have perspective, and they're going to use it in the right way. I think that was, to me, would be one of the most powerful influences that they could have. And life's going to throw so many things at them that are going to be far worse than that. And had we won a national championship, there's going to be things in life that are a lot better than that. I know that. And so in those moments, I thought that was important. And, you know, that's it. Like I said, you're humbled, but then you walk in it, and it kind of becomes part of your story, and you just you grow from it. And I think it stretches you in ways that some other things can't.
Virginia head basketball coach Tony Bennett's my guest. Tony, you talk also about the concept of unconditional acceptance of yourself, of who you are, of who you're not. How important then is that concept? And then how do you go about passing that on to your players and everybody around you?
Well, you know, when you step between the lines, you know, there's competition and there's performance things. But ultimately that idea of to know, we talk a lot about to our players, again, the bigger picture that they're unconditionally accepted by us, by their family. And when you know you have that, I think it frees you up to go and achieve what you can. You know, for me, that's in my faith, that unconditional acceptance and, you know, love that you have. And I think people need to know that. And then, again, are you always going to be judged? And is there a scoreboard? Absolutely. And that's what you go after hard. But you can say it doesn't matter, but when you know people got your back and are with you through it, ups and downs, well, that's the right place to be. And again, you compete hard, but there's always that in the background.
You know, and then, Tony, I know you and I'm asking you a lot of things that might not necessarily be basketball related, maybe more big picture, but it's so interesting. Like, one of the things you talked about as a coach is that when you look back on a given season, you don't necessarily remember those wins or those losses, but you might remember moments like a team building exercise where players and coaches each stand on a chair and they tell everybody about a hero or a challenge they've faced or a highlight from their lives. Like, what are those moments like? And why do they resonate with you so much, maybe even more so than the wins or the losses?
You did your homework, Jim. You know all the stuff we're doing.
It's all interesting so, to me. It's all interesting to me.
Good. It is. Those are, college basketball, I don't want to say it's the purest thing. I've been fortunate enough to play in the NBA just for a few years. Nothing great. I was a backup point guard. I don't pretend to have set the world on fire, but I've achieved. That was a dream of mine. And one thing I like about, you know, high school, but college, there's a sense of unity and team spirit and relationship building that is untouchable. And the things you go through, the highs and the lows, that you just, it's hard to get that at the highest level. It becomes a little more business-like, not that it's not business-like in college. And so those moments that you're together and those relationships you forge, they last beyond the wins and losses. They truly do. And it doesn't mean you're not always going to remember ACC championships or, of course, national championships. But there's something bigger and deeper working. And that's why those things, and sometimes I get in my tunnel and I forget about those things, and then I need to be reminded. But those are the things that are, I mean, they're lasting. They really are.
Tony, you could shoot it now. You're not giving yourself enough credit. You could really stroke it back in the day. You know, finally, you played in the NBA. You and Brad Stevens are very, very close. You're good friends, and you both compete, of course, but you know what he's about. I know you've spent some time around him and the Celtics. You're locked into what you're doing, and you're content, but is there any part of you kind of intellectually that thinks about, man, this guy made the transition. He is such a great NBA coach. I wonder if I could do that. I wonder what that would be like. I wonder what it would be like to work with that type of athlete. Does that ever enter your mind?
Well, before I answer that question, you talked about shooting. Joe Harris just won the NBA three-point contest.
Right.
Talking about a great shooter. I got asked the question, Joe Harris, Klay Thompson, Kyle Guy, as far as shooters. And so I've been lucky to coach those, but kudos to Joe. And I wish Malcolm would have been in it, Brogdon and Klay, and then all three guys I coached, they all should have been there. But nonetheless, it's been special to see what Joe did. But, you know, having played in it, I loved the playoffs, Jim. You know, when you get to the playoffs in the NBA, you see every possession matters. It becomes a little more college-like in the regard of really, you know, guys at that talent level playing. So that's exciting to watch the coaches and the adjustments. And who knows if that's something that will ever be part of my future. I'm so content, and I love, as I just mentioned before, the college game right now. But I really just take it, you know, steps at a time and, you know, kind of subscribe to that. But I certainly love the playoffs and watching that. But there's nothing better than the college game, in my opinion.
I want to reiterate, you had the highest three-point shooting percentage in NCAA history. You mentioned Klay. Tony, you coached him, of course, at Washington State. The Athletic just had this great piece up that mentions a 4th of July in Pullman where you invited Klay up to your house to shoot off fireworks. How excited was Klay to get into the pyrotechnics?
So, yeah, I didn't read that article. I just remember doing the interview. And I coached Klay for 1 year, and then I took the Virginia job. But I can remember that. He was doing it with my kids, and he loved it. He had a childlike simplicity to him in a good way. And apparently, before I came on your show, I can't remember who I was talking to, but he said, oh, yeah, the story's great because Klay went on and took it to other levels. But he certainly enjoyed his time with the fireworks. That I do remember.
Tony, you probably can't do it, but of all those guys you mentioned, can you even say who's the best pure shooter of the group?
Yeah, I got asked that on my radio show last night. I said, well, in college, it was me, hands down. I'd shoot them all down, no problem.
But it was.
I would say, honestly, you know, Klay, what he's done in the NBA and settings and games is amazing. But, you know, Kyle Guy in college has the ability to get on a streak. He can shoot it and turn in the air. And then Joe is continuing to improve. But, of course, NBA-wise, you have to give the nod to Klay. But they're all special in their own right. But if I see Joe, you know, doing that in the NBA, I'll put him there, and then hopefully Kyle gets to do that too.
You bet. 10 years now with the Cavaliers, a 3-time National Coach of the Year. Virginia is number 3 in both polls. They're at Louisville on Saturday. Their head coach is Tony Bennett. Tony, I appreciate the visit very much. It's always good to have you on the show, and I appreciate the relationship too. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Tony. Well done, as always. You're going to want to watch that camera, Hawk. Yesterday, Adam Hawk, in case you missed it, slammed into that very camera. Now, that camera is off to my left and was off to the side a little bit. Hawk learned the hard way. Do not walk through that door reading. You have to look at the video on my Instagram feed. It looked like there was an earthquake. Man, he hit that thing hard. Hard. This email reads, hey, Rome, I heard you had Jay Wright on yesterday. Now you have Tony Bennett coming on today. Is there any way that you can provide their contact information? Because I can't seem to find out how to reach a big-time college coach. Signed, UCLA AD Dan Guerrero. Matt in Poland Springs. I don't know. The problem with that is both those guys have better jobs. You know, I hate to say it, but they both have better jobs. How is UCLA going to get either one of those guys? I'll tell you who I'd hire if I were UCLA. Eric Musselman. Hey, Jim, is Zion single? Can you get him my digits? Signed, Chloe. That's the last thing we need, isn't it? That family getting their hooks into him. All right, we're coming right back. Open phones in hour number 3. Keep it right here.